Welcome to Aches and Gains, a weekly talk show covering all aspects of pain and pain relief. I'm Dr. Paul Christo, pain specialist at the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. Pain has reached epidemic proportions, and chronic pain affects a staggering 25% or more of the population. Its human impact is real and is felt by infants, children, all the way to older adulthood. But there's hope and there's treatment. This show offers compelling stories of those who found relief and offers insight into treatments that can ease pain and human suffering. Fibromyalgia affects up to 4% of the population and leads to widespread body pain, fatigue, sleep disturbance, and even memory problems. Some people also report difficulty swallowing, bowel or bladder abnormalities, or numbness and tingling. Women are 9 times more frequently affected than men. On today's show, actress A.J. Langer, best known for her television roles on My So-Called Life, Seinfeld, and Coach, talks about her struggles and ultimate success with fibromyalgia following her diagnosis as a teenager. Fibromyalgia expert Dr. Dan Claw from the University of Michigan then reveals a new way to diagnose this condition, helpful treatments, and new therapies on the horizon.
Aches and Gains is sponsored by King Pharmaceuticals, Endo Pharmaceuticals, Neurogesics, and Boston Scientific. Aches and Gains is also available live online. Follow us on Twitter at Dr. Paul Christo and like us on Facebook, Aches and Gains. To access podcasts of the show, please go to paulchristomd.com. That's paulchristomd.com. If you have questions or comments for Dr. Christo, especially for upcoming shows, please email him at achesandgains@gmail.com. That's achesandgains@gmail.com.
A.J. Langer, an actress best known for her roles on My So-Called Life, Seinfeld, and Coach, was diagnosed with fibromyalgia in her teens. The syndrome cast a shadow on her life, but chronic pain never got the best of her. She raises awareness and money for research and treatment of fibromyalgia. A.J., welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Before we talk about fibromyalgia, tell us what you've been doing. I heard, for example, that you've married into British royalty.
It's actually not royalty, but people like to say so. Well, I pretty much worked from 15 to 23 and did the last show I did aired for a while was Three Sisters, and then I did a couple more. And after Three Sisters, it was the time when I needed to take a break and take a look at my health. I'd been diagnosed with fibromyalgia and various other autoimmune things from a very young age.
Wow. Had your life pretty much stayed the same since your teens?
It had gotten to a point where I wasn't able to keep it in check, and I needed to take time off. And when I finally just said, I'm done, and I need to take a break and take care of myself, within 3 months I had found a very healthy home and a doctor who was very empowering and made things simple. And I met my husband.
AJ, take us through the events that led to your diagnosis of fibromyalgia from your teens.
My mother had fibromyalgia, but she was diagnosed with hundreds of different things and just in the end decided not to pay attention to it, which isn't necessarily the healthiest way to go, but I understand. I'd always had high fevers as a child. Getting older, you know, I was a tomboy, I had a big brother, so I was very into sports. It was a real, you know, sports family, and the motto of pushing through it and sucking it up and all those not-so-healthy mantras kind of kept me going.
What were some of your symptoms?
I had lots of symptoms, lots of infections and lots of times on antibiotics, lots of injuries. I injured my hip playing baseball when I was 13, and it never really got better, and so my hip always hurt, my legs started hurting, my arms started hurting, headaches, fevers, and just I didn't feel like I could handle much, but there was no room for being allowed that freedom to not, you know, to have to take a rest or be gentle with my body. I was propelled to become an overachiever. And
so it seems like you had some of the typical symptoms of fibromyalgia, like widespread body pain, fatigue, headaches?
All the above. Mm-hmm. Chronic headaches, IBS syndrome from time to time, skin issues. It was just one thing after the next, and it was just so dramatic. And I really was ashamed that it was so dramatic because I was in a family that don't bring too much attention to yourself. So I proceeded to isolate and I was a workaholic, and no one knew that all my off time was either, you know, in bed, or whenever I wasn't shooting, I was flying to different parts of the world to study different practices of self-care and all these things, which I don't think those were very healthy either, because it was kind of a desperation.
AJ, tell us about the emotional burden of having fibromyalgia.
There's different levels of learning you go through with fibromyalgia and with any, you know, injury that lays you up and makes you rethink your whole life.
Right.
And one is, I'm all alone. You know, no one else understands this pain. And then there's a point where you can get to where it becomes universal and you understand that everybody's got something. And I've come to terms with the fact that my body has a fragile ecosystem and I have to tend to it.
This is Dr. Paul Christo, and you're listening to Aches and Gains. When we come back, AJ, I'd like you to tell us what your friends and family thought about your symptoms.
Follow us on Twitter at Dr. Paul Christo and like us on Facebook, Aches and Gains. Aches and Gains is sponsored by King Pharmaceuticals, a leading pharmaceutical company focused in specialty-driven markets, including pain management, and dedicated to improving and protecting quality of life for people around the world. If you have questions or comments for Dr. Christo, especially for upcoming shows, please email him at achesandgains@gmail.com. That's achesandgains@gmail.com.
And we're back. AJ, tell us what your friends, family, and physicians thought about your symptoms.
I overheard a doctor tell my mom he thought I was faking it. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, why would I fake it? Why would I? Because I want to fit. I want to play sports. I want to be strong. I want to be a strong woman. So why would I fake, you know, this pain that keeps me out of the sports that I love and the things that I love and the activities that I love? So it was very confusing. I remember getting this EMG test. It was so painful. They stick the needle in, then they move the muscle around, and they did it to my whole body. It set my whole body off. Mm. It was so painful. And that was the doctor that told my mom he thought I was faking it, after he put me through this torture that I've never forgotten.
AJ, how did you feel when you were finally diagnosed with fibromyalgia?
It pissed me off. I hated it.
Oh.
I hated it. I mean, there's always a sense of relief. I got diagnosed with MS at one point, and I felt a huge sense of relief, which is just wrong. Because I wanted something that people would respect. I wanted something that people actually could acknowledge. The same thing happened when I was diagnosed with lupus, neither of which I had.
What do you say to those who simply don't believe that this syndrome is real?
You know, my massage therapist said it best, and she goes, if anybody questions fibromyalgia, they need to just put their hands on someone who has it. Because it's a thickening and tightening of the fascia around these muscles, which makes it really hard for the muscles to get circulation into them. One thing that has really been coming up recently, which is fascinating me, is chronic pain and chronic victim behaviors, which if somebody had mentioned that to me, which they kind of did 10 years ago, 15 years ago, I would have been really defensive and really annoyed by that. You know, how can I not be a victim? I'm going to all these doctors. They're treating me like, you know, crap. Nobody's listening to me. I can't find enough support. And all of these things I'm seeing now as, you know, just kind of watching the thoughts that happen when I'm in that place of feeling helpless.
In that place of helplessness, what have you learned?
It really can teach you a level of compassion for, you know, every other person on this earth, in a way that people who haven't experienced pain aren't capable.
What blend of treatments have been the most valuable in relieving your pain?
I started surfing quite early, mm-hmm. but when I started surfing more and more, I realized that that was something that really made me feel good. You know, my neck would go out sometimes, my back would hurt sometimes, but it just didn't matter. There was something about the water, and that made me feel good. And then I found hiking, gentle hikes, but they made me feel good. So I kept doing those. And then I found, you know, a really healing yoga class, a gentle one. Medications scare me. I don't like taking them. They make me feel dependent, where I actually have faith that my body is capable of healing. I just have to learn how to be gentle enough. But when you get to a point where you're too depleted and your body's not functioning, so therefore it's like impossible to take care of yourself. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you need the support of a medication in order to exercise, in order to do things that make you happy, like, you know, hiking or being with friends, in order to get over the hump. I did find Cymbalta helpful, but I take the babiest baby dose, and that's what was so great about my doctor, is he would help me try things at certain times. But he knew that I was so sensitive, so therefore he'd give you the baby dose. Mm-hmm. The Lyrica is way too strong. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's great that fibromyalgia is acknowledged. Right. There was a time when my adrenals, when I had been working so hard, and this was a show called Three Sisters, and my health was the first time I'd ever been sick and couldn't push through it. I was just mortified and dealt with a bit of abusive, you know, responses from work, because obviously television isn't really conducive to self-care. And it was my responsibility to take care of myself, and I wasn't doing so.
And in fact, how is fibromyalgia affecting your life behind the scenes?
You know, I was able to work in television and film for years and years, and no one knew, because they'd spend, you know, all this time on hair and makeup and put on my mask and dress me up so I look nice, and no one knew. I was in the hospital almost every weekend on an IV for half a year at a time when I was off work. Because you look fine. It makes you feel crazy. It makes you want to isolate. It makes you feel unworthy. It makes you feel like following your dreams is impossible. Like having a healthy, loving relationship is impossible. The thought of having kids seems impossible. I had a doctor tell me in front of my father that I probably wouldn't be able to have children easily.
Wow, I see how that could be very upsetting. AJ, can you point to a specific therapy that really has changed your life?
Tai Chi, meditation, learning how to sit, which was a really hard thing for me to learn. It was not something I was a natural at.
Me either.
And it was very confusing with chronic pain, because just sitting there hurts. Yoga, IBP work is integrative body psychotherapy, which sounds really, you know, deep and intellectual, but it's just simple. Going in and somebody helping you separate and get perspective on habits and behaviors that aren't serving you. So anything that helps with that, which all of these things, the Tai Chi, the meditation, the yoga, hiking, surfing, they give me a peace of heart and a peace of mind, and I'm able to be still for a minute and see all the silly things, you know, the worries, the negative thought patterns, the all that stuff that doesn't serve me. And you can get perspective when you're in a peaceful place.
AJ Langer, thank you so much for being here today.
My pleasure.
Coming up next, Dr. Dan Klaw, a fibromyalgia expert from the University of Michigan.
Aches and Gains is sponsored by Endo Pharmaceuticals, a U.S.-based specialty healthcare solutions company that delivers innovative diagnostics, drugs, devices, and clinical data to meet the needs of patients in areas such as pain, urology, oncology, and endocrinology. To access podcasts of the show, please go to paulchristomd.com. That's paulchristomd.com.
And Dr. Daniel Klaw is dedicated to clinical care and research on fibromyalgia. He directs the Chronic Pain and Fatigue Research Center at the University of Michigan. Dr. Klaw, welcome to Aches and Gains.
Thank you.
Dr. Klaw, what is fibromyalgia?
It's a condition that's characterized by widespread pain throughout the body, as well as other symptoms such as sleep difficulties, memory problems, fatigue. It's probably one of the most common pain conditions that we know of. We think that much of the pain in fibromyalgia is really coming from the so-called central nervous system, the brain and the spinal cord, in contrast to other pain states where the pain may primarily be occurring because there's damage or inflammation out in the peripheral tissues. But what we've learned about fibromyalgia is that at both the brain and the spinal cord level, there seems to be an increase in the volume control or the gain on pain processing. So even though people don't have damage or inflammation in the regions of the body where they're experiencing pain, they're having pain really because this volume control setting is too high. Even if you look at a group of patients with, for example, a rheumatic disease like osteoarthritis or rheumatoid arthritis or lupus, that up to 25 or 30% of individuals with those conditions may have a prominent element of, what do you want to call it, fibromyalgia, or what do you want to call it, central pain. But even in those conditions, many individuals have pain that is more due to a volume control problem than it is due to damage or inflammation in their peripheral tissues.
So that's an intriguing overlap. And for those who have fibromyalgia, should they be concerned that they may have ongoing damage to the central nervous system?
We don't think of fibromyalgia as being a condition characterized by damage of the joints or the muscles, you know, as occurs in some of those other conditions that I just talked about. There may be, not just in fibromyalgia, but in fact, in a lot of chronic pain conditions, some damage to the nervous system in individuals with chronic pain. There's a lot of evidence, for example, that regions of the brain that we know are involved in pain processing are atrophied or smaller in people with fibromyalgia, as well as headache and a number of those other pain conditions that I talked about earlier.
This is Dr. Paul Christo, and you're listening to Aches and Gains. When we come back, we'll find out what causes fibromyalgia.
Aches and Gains is sponsored by Neurogesics, a biopharmaceutical company focused on developing and commercializing novel pain management therapies. Aches and Gains is also available live online. Follow us on Twitter at Dr. Paul Christo and like us on Facebook, Aches and Gains.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Dr. Dan Klaw from the University of Michigan. Dan, what are the causes of fibromyalgia?
There are some neurotransmitters like substance P, glutamate, nerve growth factor that we know are high in individuals with fibromyalgia, and other neurotransmitters like serotonin, norepinephrine that we know are low in people with fibromyalgia. And we think that imbalance of neurotransmitters, high levels of neurotransmitters that turn up the volume control, and or low levels of neurotransmitters that typically dampen or turn down the volume control, can lead to this final common state that we call fibromyalgia or central pain.
Well, why does this syndrome affect only certain people?
There have been a number of genes that have been identified in the last 5 years that seem to be responsible for either turning up or turning down the volume control setting in a given individual. And if you happen to be born with some of those genes that make you more pain sensitive, you not only will be more sensitive to any kind of pain that's presented to you, you know, for example, if we push on that person's thumb or we apply heat to them, they would experience more pain. But it also seems that the genes that people are born with puts them at higher risk of developing a number of different types of chronic pain conditions over the course of their lifetime.
Well, Dr. Klaw, does someone with fibromyalgia look any different from anybody else?
Well, first of all, everyone has seen someone with fibromyalgia because it affects at least 2 to 4% of the population. But if they haven't identified that person as being a fibromyalgia patient, it wouldn't be that surprising because the outwardly fibromyalgia patients look normal, if you will. There's nothing on physical examination, for example, except finding people to be tender throughout their body that would clue you into the fact that something is wrong with a fibromyalgia patient. And this is something that, in fact, fibromyalgia patients find very frustrating, that if someone has a condition like rheumatoid arthritis or osteoarthritis where either a lay person or a doctor can pretty clearly see that there's damage to the joints, that individual is often thought to have a quote-unquote more legitimate pain condition than people with fibromyalgia where there's not necessarily any outward damage.
And Dan, what kind of pain are fibromyalgia patients experiencing?
Pain in a number of different areas of their body, not just one or two areas of their body, that they've had pain in many regions of their body, perhaps beginning as early as a childhood or adolescence, and literally the pain seems to move around their body over the course of their lifetime, and that also that they would have some of these other accompanying symptoms, such as fatigue, sleep difficulties, memory problems, that would occur in addition to the pain.
Tell us about some of the medicines that are used to help treat fibromyalgia.
Most people are familiar with ibuprofen or naproxen, you know, Aleve, Motrin, things like that. And most people are also familiar with opioid drugs or narcotics. And those two classes of drugs seem to work fairly well in people that have chronic pain due to some damage or inflammation out in their peripheral tissues, but don't work nearly as well in these central pain conditions where the best drugs are drugs that change the levels of neurotransmitters in the brain that are involved in turning up or turning down the volume controls. Drugs like duloxetine, which is also called Cymbalta, or milnacipran, which is also called Savilla, or pregabalin or gabapentin, which are Lyrica and Neurontin, are examples of those types of drugs that have been shown in multiple trials to be effective in fibromyalgia patients.
Dr. Claw, I read a little bit about a new drug called sodium oxybate that seems pretty exciting and innovative for the treatment of fibromyalgia. Will you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, in fact, if you look at the data from that drug compared to the data for the other three drugs that are already approved, it's probably more effective overall for treating the pain, the fatigue, the sleep disturbances associated with fibromyalgia, but it also has more side effects than those other drugs. So the FDA recently decided not to approve the drug for fibromyalgia until the company came back to them with some more studies and trials.
And yet it's used to treat narcolepsy in the United States, and I believe it's used in other countries.
It is available in the United States. It is available in other countries. It's widely used, for example, as general anesthetic in Europe. That same drug is known as GHB, which became used as an illicit, if you will, date rape drug.
Wow, that's a serious problem with the use of that drug. Before we wrap up, I'd like to ask you two questions. One, what are some of the non-traditional or mind-body therapies that are most useful for the treatment of fibromyalgia? And two, tell us about this intriguing new therapy with magnets and electricity.
These non-drug therapies like exercise, cognitive behavioral therapy, education, these are rarely used in clinical practice, and when they are used, they really help quite a bit. There's a number of different types of therapy, neuromodulatory therapy, where either by putting a magnet over the top of someone's skull or applying a little bit of electricity over someone's skull, that it can actually activate regions of the brain. And by activating these regions of the brain, it can reduce pain.
Well, Dan, that's a lot of helpful information. I can't thank you enough for being here.
Thank you.
I wish we had more time for you to discuss the work that you did on functional MRI imaging that demonstrated that there are actual changes in the brains of those patients suffering from fibromyalgia. And here are some questions for today. Here's one from Ashley in San Francisco, California. What is the current thinking on the causes of fibromyalgia? It's my understanding that problems with lack of deep sleep can bring on the symptoms of fibromyalgia, but it's not necessarily the cause of it. Ashley, the cause is unclear, but the evidence points to a problem with how pain is processed in the central nervous system, that is, in the spinal cord and brain. There are associations with a number of triggers, such as stressful or traumatic events, as well as repetitive injuries, and certain diseases like Lyme disease, lupus, and ankylosing spondylitis. Viral infections like hepatitis B and C and HIV are also associated with the development of fibromyalgia. Sleep is often disturbed, and specifically a lack of deep sleep, but sleep is not disturbed in all patients, and restoring sleep does not fully improve the symptoms of pain and fatigue. Joan from Augusta, Maine writes, what options are there other than surgery for spinal stenosis? Joan, first, if the stenosis or narrowing around the spinal cord or spinal nerves is severe and is causing weakness, sensation problems, or bowel or bladder problems, surgery is probably needed. Make sure you talk to a spine surgeon about your specific symptoms. Otherwise, medications, physical therapy to strengthen the abdominal and back muscles, nerve blocks, and even spinal cord stimulation are useful options. It depends on whether you have back pain only, back and leg pain, or just leg pain. Consult a pain physician for more guidance on what might be most helpful for you.
Aches and Gains is sponsored by King Pharmaceuticals, Endo Pharmaceuticals, Neurogesics, and Boston Scientific. Tune in next time when we explore another interesting topic on aches and gains. To access podcasts of the show, please go to paulchristomd.com. That's paulchristomd.com. Aches and Gains is also available live online. Follow us on Twitter at @DrPaulChristo and like us on Facebook, Aches and Gains. The views and opinions expressed in this radio program are solely the views of Dr. Paul Christo and do not necessarily express the views of this radio station and Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine, nor an endorsement by any or all of them of any of its content. This show provides medical information, not advice. Please consult your personal physician before engaging in any course of treatment or use of any of the techniques or products discussed on this show. Discussion of particular uses of products on this show have not been approved by any of the manufacturers of such products. Aches and Gains is produced by Eric Vohr and Dr. Paul Christo. Ty Ford is the audio engineer, and Elsa Langford is the technical consultant and engineer. Thanks for listening. This is Aches and Gains with Dr. Paul Christo.